The following is a recording of the Kettleson Memorial Library's Live Poetry Cafe event held on April 26th, 2015.
Welcome, everyone, to the Poetry Cafe. Well, my name is John Straley. I'm from Sitka, Alaska, 99835, as my friend Richard Nelson would say. And I'm so honored to be here and so happy to see everyone here. What a wonderful night to celebrate Poetry Month. We're here to acknowledge the power of poetry. I have loved poetry all my life. There are many poetic forms, and there are many poets that write poems that are called Ars Poetica. Andrew Marvel wrote a very famous poem. It means the art of poetry, Ars Poetica. It's sort of an essay on what poetry should be. And I have one of my own that I thought I'd share with you tonight. I'll just read one poem at the beginning. It's called Ars Poetica, Ars Poetica. I thought of it when I was picked up by a particularly strange cab driver off of a ship. It's called When You Stumbled Down the gangway onto the uneven planks of a foreign wharf. Most of the cab drivers waiting behind the fence will take you without asking to the brightly lit American hotel where the locals bring you a martini and a steak with some strange spice that you scrape to the side of your plate with the blade of your knife and order another drink. Some cab drivers will take you to their cousin's restaurant where the candles sit in plastic fishnet goblets, and the waitress who speaks four words of English wears a faded house dress and carries a straight-edged razor hooked to the band of her underwear. Some cab drivers want to take you to a haunted house where fat men in hockey masks jump out from the dark with chainsaws blaring across the floors that are greased with theatrical blood. There are some drivers who will take you to the Natural History Museum with threadbare ungulates standing inside their glass cases, dust gathering on their unblinking eyes, while the drivers recite the names of every flower they can remember. But for that, they expect a fat tip and act like they may come back and rob you if they don't get it. And yes, there are some drivers who will take you to the warehouse district where grim men who don't even bother to hide their faces, sharpened hook knives fashioned from saw blades, and the ugly dogs with broken jaws pull against their chains at the first sniff of you. And still some others will take you to their favorite deserted spot by the river, and all they'll do is chain smoke cigarettes and talk to you for hours about their exquisite, lonely lives. I've ridden all those routes and driven all those fares to dust, yet I am none of those cab drivers. Now I want to take you to the place that seems a little like your own hometown, but with clear-eyed waitresses who nod their head no when they really mean maybe. And when you drink the local brew, it turns to steam with the first swallow, and clouds whirl in your skull, atomizing everything you thought you knew, forming and reforming like smoke rolling from a bonfire of all your old photographs, children in bathtubs, fishing trips, and trout slithering from your ears, schooling above your head, along with the faces of everyone who ever loved you, holding their strong arms out, singing strange and joyous songs, detailing their death, your death, everyone's resurrection into this world that it can't be real, but still, it fades into the dance music playing on the radio from the kitchen, and when someone drops a tray of glasses, everyone laughs and you wake up to look at your watch and decide it's time to get back to that ship that waits heavy, heavy on thick lines at the wharf. When the waitress brings the bill, you declare your love for her for such a long time that I have to force you back into my cab so you can get safely back to the ship. And when your wallet falls out of your back pocket halfway up the gangway. I don't call after you or take you to the ship take it to the ship's agent, but wait until you leave, then pick it up and keep all the cash, mail back the rest, your credit, your identity in a week, maybe three, after you've gotten used to living without any of it. I keep your money, for many reasons, I suppose, but mostly because, whether I like it or not, that's just the kind of cab driver I've become. So, I hope none of the young poets in the audience tonight will take my advice on anything, but follow their own true course. And the first poet tonight we have is Mads Kusk. Lives in Copenhagen near the 57th parallel, where he works as a librarian. Soccer is his kind of yoga.
My feet are wet, have gone through the green, singing in the big blue, looking out over the oat land, commemorating the veterinarian. Here he went when the Germans came, when Alzheimer invaded. Looking out over the landscape that I don't understand, knew all of the properties, remembered the people there, their animals, and all of their defects. Looked to Brunn, where the indie farmer lives, where Jens Kirk made sweet verses about na i tu. That's how they talk where I come from. And some excited like an immune system about the occupation. Wiegand's våben shown on Wendbjerg with his academic left foot, on those soccer fields in the lime pits clad with seabuck thorn. Winters in the hall, his Copenhagen wars among the locals. The television mast aligns with the church in Tisted, behind it, handklit with seabuck thorn. The Limfjord in between light reflecting. On the deep blue lip of the North Sea, the ferry to the Faroe Islands. 57th degree north, imaginarily in across the shore, right through Norse Oatland and on around the world. Torshøj's shaved dome in the middle ground, emptied for its content of golden boats. Know where the showcase stands in Copenhagen. Know the way. Corn bunting swinging in dock. Bumblebee on its way into bluebell. Peacock butterfly in Margaret's daisy. Beetles in evening star. Thank you.
Mariah Warren is our next speaker, lives and fishes out of Sitka. She recently attended and shared her writing at the Fisher Poets Gathering in Astoria, Oregon. Welcome.
Trolling for the word that got away. They slither by with silver fins and leave me clawing at the air, those synonyms with gleeful grins and trailing seaweed in their hair. So haul the gear and clear the hooks, swing the gaff hook hard and true, carry pens and blank-paged books, or words will put the slip on you. It's not a test, one verb confessed. We're noun for being hard to haul. But hurry, lest you lose the best. You just can't catch us all. Thank you. The second piece I wrote when I was a senior in high school and working at Safeway. It was written for the courtesy clerks, which is what at Safeway they call the baggers. I call it O Courteous Thou. It is a sonnet in the Shakespearean form. O courtesy whose virtue knows not bounds, I pen these humble verses in thy name. For maudlin though my groveling surely sounds, without you, checking wouldn't be the same. Although sometimes you stray beyond my sight, as through the distant isles you roameth free, Like dawn bestows the world with shimmering light, the intercom will bring you back to me. You're all I need, an angel at my back. Your pure perfection leaves me in a daze. Your name should be upon a golden plaque, and choirs should sing hosannas in your praise. Without you, clouds would fall and hell would freeze. Now, won't you bag these groceries for me, please? Thank you.
Sonnet, beautiful. Thank you. Isabel Carter is next. She loves poetry. She has one dog and one cat. That's beautiful. Her favorite color is blue. Her favorite animals are horses. I wonder how her dog and cat feel about that. Her favorite poet is Shel Silverstein. Isabel Carter.
My poem is a bit silly and, very silly. It's a weird title. It's called Cheese Goldfish. Okay, here goes. The day my puppy got his head stuck in an empty bag of cheese goldfish, I thought I was going to die of laughter. He found the delicious-smelling container in the trash, and he couldn't resist putting his head all the way inside. Unable to remove his new headgear, we watched the crinkly paper bag inflate and deflate as he breathed, like a tiny furry soldier. With a foil-lined helmet, he ran around the house excitedly, unable to see where he was going. Powerless to control our laughter at this ridiculous sight, we finally freed him from the bag when we caught our breath. It seemed like the right thing to do. Thank you.
Great job. Silliness is my favorite genre. Eugene Solovyov, I knew I was going to butcher his last name, writes poems and short stories. He's been published in various Alaskan magazines and has a book of poetry, How to Frame a Landscape. Eugene.
This one's called Becoming. The crocuses and the daffodils burst through the snow. Although it was March and the wind still felt arctic, but inside you something horrible stirred, and you did not notice the spring's arrival. While the sun crashed through the snowdrifts and the returning hummingbirds searched for nectar, in our home a war was raging, and you tried to rally against the invaders. By the time the lilacs, the shameless hussies, troubled the air with fragrance and longing, you relied on chemotherapy and radiation and barely recognized your body. I walked you outside to see the morning where robins chirped and roses conspired to make you forget your room in the hospital and the smell of drugs, disease, and sadness. All the summer life so busy and vibrant, I thought it might invigorate and sustain you, strengthen the muscles, refresh the blood flow, give the appearance of health and happiness. The dandelion's riotous celebration hurts your senses and the crow's narcissistic self-indulgence. While you struggled with each laborious inhalation, hurting with every step, relief not coming. You left me with the sunset one evening in July, slipping away into the late dusk of the northern forests. By that time, death was a release and a blessing, I said to myself in my newfound loneliness. Now perhaps you fly home with the hummingbirds. The lilacs no longer disturb your senses. The robins and the roses don't bring sorrow, and you are free of pain and memory. Now you are in the wind, and you are in the sunlight, starlight. In an approaching storm, I can hear you laughing. In the shrill song of birds and the gentle summer breezes, you are also there. You are becoming. You are everywhere the mist glistens. All the oceans are filled with your shadow. So I won't say goodbye or cry in sadness, and I will hide the part of me that's broken. The other one is called Ravens. They are the only birds that I feel insecure facing. like the one this morning that cocked his head, cowering and hopping in front of me on the sidewalk, the look he gave me, my God, past and future mischief in his eyes, questioning my very existence, analyzing me from my head down to my toes. The black is not black at all. There's purple in it, blue even, a mix of colors. Polished, sparkling feathers cover unmistakable intelligence, poise, disdain, curiosity, wisdom. I would rather face an eagle or a blue heron or a seagull any day. They're smart birds also, but so much simpler. It's all about fishing with them and not getting in their way. Otherwise, they don't care. They don't judge or question my motives. Their interest in me is shallow. They don't size me up, except whether to sit still or take flight when I approach them. But the ravens, it's like going to a therapist or a priest, confessing. And I'm sure the news will be bad. I'm not good enough for them. I have sinned, made mistakes, done foolish things. I can never live up to their high standards. I'm walking on eggshells, can do nothing right. I'm a failure in their eyes. I will not go outside again. It is dangerous. My ego is fragile, easily bruised, and they know just how to damage it. I'll have to move now. Which faraway land can I escape to? What distant country can I exile myself to where I will not be daily scrutinized by the ravens?
Thank you. Tracy Turner is a singer, songwriter, and poet. She has written and performed from Alaska to Puerto Rico and finds the language of the island similar, regardless of the latitude. Tracy.
Good evening. I have two poems of the season. The first, Opening Day. Winds shift, crisp air thawing at the edge. Each breath fills with sharp, sweet scents of salt and sea, birth and decay. Once more he wakes, alive, excited as the boy within this bent and aged frame. He steps from greening earth into his summer home. Gulls and lines creak endlessly, wood and bones groan, singing songs of seasons gone. The diesel thrums a deafening companion made mute by constancy, or more familiarity, like breathing of a loved one, unnoticed till it falter or fail. On deck, he casts loose her ties, then turns her nose toward gray meets gray, and dreams of silver flashing in green deep. Spring cleaning. As sunlight hits the dirty windows, I am inclined to clean dark corners, to remove the dusty sheets of memory, to polish old wounds until they shine. I wander through the long shut rooms and carefully examine each treasured pane. I hold them close, then look with equal hope and horror at these hurts I have kept so long. Here is a love that could never be returned, there an expectation never met. Here are every failure of heart and deed, and in the place of pride, my greatest sorrow, a familial voice on continuous loop. Is that the best that you can do? It is not, nor could it be, as long as there is still breath. I box my ghosts and drag them to the curb. I am learning, finally, what is enough.
Thank you, Tracy. Lena Kaelman loves poetry. She has four dogs. Her favorite poet is Shel Silverstein, and she enjoys big words that are meaningful. Lena grew up as an only child.
Is this close enough? I'm reading a poem called Too Many Possibilities. Some of the lines are based on a poem by Shel Silverstein. One picture puzzle piece. One picture puzzle piece lying on the green grass. One picture puzzle piece Perhaps it could be a piece of the beanstalk that Jack climbed, or maybe a fierce dragon's tail. Perhaps a string of hair from Snow White's stepmother, or maybe a vine on Rapunzel's great stone tower. A pomegranate seeds from ancient Greece, or maybe a piece of leaf being blown away in the crisp autumn, or maybe a piece of wet seaweed that blew off the beach. Nothing has more possibilities than one picture puzzle piece.
Nicely done. Jean Queen Castro received her unique name due to her father's love of both science and royalty. She is originally from the Philippines and on a 3-year adventure in the United States as a traveling nurse. She regrets she cannot be here to read her poetry as she was recently transferred from Sitka to a hospital in New Mexico. But her poems will be read tonight by Jasmine Shaw.
Jean Queen is a student of mine, and she wrote this poem inspired by her having to leave Sitka, a town she really enjoyed. It's called Bittersweet. A sea otter cracking shells for a meal, drifting duck, flapping fish, swimming seal. Abundance is what you see in the sea, but this is where I never want to be. Mighty whale, a superstar in the water, a head turner, even just the sight of your spout. Fascinated people stop to take a picture, yet I see a stout monster, ugly like a trout. Chum, sockeye, coho, pinky, or chinook. A tasty treat, enjoyed even uncooked. Alaska has the best salmon. Oh, come on, it's found in every Walmart seafood section. From the woods to the coast, a bear may be seen, covered in soft brown fur, looking huggable. Exploring the stream, appearing calm and serene. Startle the beast and you'll be in big trouble. Eagles soar high, ravens conquer the sky, glide up and down, capture a prey and fly. Some species are endangered and rare. I don't know their names, nor do I really care. Mount Edgecombe and Snowcap Mountains, beautiful backdrop of this vibrant place, home to evergreen parks and colorful gardens, but it's suffocating, living in a tiny space. Lovely people, the jewel of this town, making things fun so no one will frown. A peaceful society bound by solidarity. Hey, nothing lasts forever in a community. Sorry for being so insolent and mean. Just being bitter, because soon I will depart from a pleasant place, a heavenly haven, sayonara Sitka, a torture to my heart.
Ree Christensen has grown up as an only child, and she hates coffee. She has 2 cats, 1 dog, and she is in Mr. Burrow's class at Keet Gushaheen. Ree, here she is. An inveterate coffee hater.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Today I'm going to read 2 poems. One is for my parents, my mom. She loves this poem, and she inspired me to start writing poems. It's called I'm Done. I'm done. The smell of spaghetti floats through the air. The music is loud. Here I am, writing in this very book. News buzzing through the air. Columbine lay still. And I have a new poem I wrote yesterday, because I went to the beach. It's called The Beach. The waves roll in as if wanting me to join in. A youngster runs across the sand with a bucket and a fish. A seagull pecks at a fish carcass, but a raven takes its place. The wind stirs up the salty air. I know the rhythm of the beach.
Larry Wright was born in the SJ Infirmary in 1954, and during the half dozen decades between then and now, he has been seen and heard in Sitka as a bad singer, a worse comedian, and a mediocre actor. Those dubious skills has fled him over the years, and he has returned to the pen and keyboard in a further attempt to expose himself in public without getting arrested. Larry Wright. This is called Thread. There was a thread laying on the floor, loose as threads sometimes are. Languid, fuzzy little piece of fluff, not coiled, but serpentine and sinuous. Though here and there I could see a kink, or perhaps a knot, too fine for my eyes as well. Too fine and too far from my eyes for me to tell color, smudge not being a color. It caught my eye and drew my interest, so I bent to pick it up and bring it close. Somewhere between upright and the thread, I was reminded of my age, as my back creaked silently, vertebrae resisting in the middle while lower down a few muscles complained, reminding me of their strained relationship with gravity. So there was some shift and settle before I had found the floor with my fingers, stroking index and thumb softly together to capture the thread near one end. Accompanied by the now usual sounds, I straightened myself back up, stepping back and shuffling my slipper-clad feet back to settle into the still warm comfort of my chair. I pulled the thread and myself around in the chair to where the light was good. Sad to think about how there are fewer places with good light in the world now. But in the good light, I could pull the thread close and examine it with my eyes. How remarkable the ordinariness that met my gaze. Such a mundane little bit of fluff. Even drawn close, it was fuzzy. Fuzzy ended and even fuzzy sided. But it was hard to know whether the fuzzy edges of its existence were because it was slowly losing itself to the world, or whether it was pulling little bits of the universe from everywhere into itself. A frizzy conundrum that left me guessing at where the thread ended and the world began, and I'm a bad guesser. I gave the little thread my regard, brows less furrowed now and with a wide-eyed kind of focus, unsquinted as I am. I can see that this thread is not of a piece, but made up of much else. Bits of dark red blending into rusty browns, hints of yellowed white and pale blue poking out here and there, the lines of color interrupted by odd green and gray specks that faded in and out, denying my eyes the ability to understand it, as if this thread could grant me more than life did. What is the story of this thread? It seemed so much longer before I took it in my hands. It seemed so whole, so of itself. Even when I know it was once part of something else, something larger, what brought this thread to where it is? What brought me here to be holding it? Why is it important? Who could find importance in a thread? Or meaning? As significant as tea leaves and chicken bones. God does not play dice, they say. What dice, I ask? You're dreaming the wrong mythology. So I gaze at my thread and feel a little sad to think of how it lacks luster, as worn things often do. It seems too soft for something that has borne so much for so long. I imagine its stiff resolve failing. I could tuck you away for a while, I think, and keep you safe, away from the wearying world, a while. But that is not what threads are for. I hold you in my hand, but in the end, you will slip free. Thank you. Our next poet is Ashia Lane. And after Ashia, I think we're going to take a break. And Ashia was given a poetry crash course in grad school after suddenly deciding to pursue a degree in the stuff. It was a rocky road to loving it, but now she enjoys reading and writing lines on her own. Ashia Lane, here she is, the proprietress of Old Harbor Books.
I brought a silly poem also. I had inspiration from a squirrel while I was working on a project in Totem Park, and so this is kind of from that. A Squirrel's Pride. I have the best midden in town. I'm the fattest squirrel.
I may not be fast, but I'm no sleeper. This is my midden. It goes under the cedar into the tree. It's warm. I have a stash of food. I chatter at people each day. I live in the middle of everything. See my midden? It's the best. I have the deepest midden. I'm head squirrel in charge. I keep everyone in line, even the ravens. I have authority. Did you want to come in my midden? Take a video, have a look. It's the best. I race across the trail once a day. I can do it in 20 seconds. I like the other side. Have you ever seen such a stupendous midden? Or a greater stash? It's the best. I have a red tail. I can speak 3 languages if you count squirrel. I'm a faster talker than the next squirrel. This is my cache house, where I store my pine cones. I have over 500 cones. I am a great and powerful squirrel. I have the best midden in town. I'm the fattest squirrel.
Bill the Giant writes all of his own poetry in chalk on the sidewalk. Sitka Rain leaves his work short and blurry. Bill, come on up.
Hello. All right, my one poem for the night. I'll have a poem and then something else. So prepare yourself for the something else. But for now, the poem. It's called If You Want to Make It Better. If you want to make it better, put a bird on it. Kiss it. Praise Jesus. If you want to make it better, call Ghostbusters. Try it with sriracha. If you want to make it better, leave it alone. Lead by example. Ask for help. Care. Care a whole awful lot. If you want to make it better, do something, even if it's wrong. It's a whole poem. It's done now. Okay. So here's the something else. So everybody's going to need to close their eyes because this is terrifying for me. So just need to just do that. Just it's going to be okay. You can take my word for it. Close them on up. This is from my grandma, and I'm going to share it with you, but it's from her to me, and now from me to you. Bye, Lulu. Bye, Lulu. Bye, Lulu. Lulu. Bye, Lulu. Bye, Lulu. Bye, Lulu. Lulu. I love you. I love you. I love you. Of you. There you go.
Bill the Giant. Tammy Parker Song remembers the first poem she ever wrote at age 8 about a single and singular piece of wheat in a huge wheat field. She's written a lot of words since then, many of them about being singular in a crowd of seemingly lookalikes. This makes her realize what we care about when we are young is often what we care about all of our lives. Tammy Parker Song.
I wrote this poem for the kids in this poetry club. So this is for Zoe, Ree, Lena, and Isabel. Whatever words seem important to you are, follow them. If you like the word lamb, follow that lamb wherever she goes. If she totters over to a Coke machine, sits down, and looks up with big brown eyes at the splashy red picture of ice and Coca-Cola backlit on the machine, follow her there, even though it seems like a Coke machine does not belong in a poem. Whatever seems like it really does not belong in your poem is probably what your poem needs most. This is true now when you are 8 years old and 11 years old, and it will always be true. Let's say that after a while, the lamb wanders away from the Coke machine and ambles across goat-munched verdant hills up to the movie theater in a small village. And the lamb somehow slips past the ticket attendant and you slip past too, and then you're following the lamb down the theater aisle while an action movie is flicking across the screen. There's a chase scene that seems to be taking place in a cobble street part of Paris, and you don't even like action movies or chase scenes, and you do not care at all about Paris. How did you get here? You got here because you like the word lamb. It is okay that you are here. It is good that you are here. Don't worry. You will not always be here. The lamb will grow up into a sheep. The movie will end. Other movies will come and they will go. Someday the theater itself will go. But just think. If you hadn't liked the word lamb, you'd never have ended up here walking across those cliche Irish-like fields and then transcending the cliche here in the movie aisle, all the moviegoers silhouetted. And what's that that's catching your eye? Just there to your left. Isn't it a 19th century female acrobat? Also from Paris? All bustled and frilled, her face painted. What's she doing here? That word acrobat, you've heard it before. But now for the first time, you hear the word. Acrobat. Acrobat. She, this particular acrobat, comes from the time when the French word l'acrobat, walking on tiptoe, had just entered English. Tiptoe, the way lambs seem to walk. She, the acrobat, turns and looks at you. This is what poetry is like. Who cares about the Coke machine now? Where might life possibly take you? Maybe even Paris could be interesting. You have been, as the English poet David White says, blessed with hunger. What will you and the acrobat do next? What words will be your coracle, your tightrope, your bit and bridle, your backlit screen, your juice, your hunger, your loam? Keep going. Whatever words seem important to you are.
Zoe Trafton is in third grade, and her teacher at Keith Gushaheen is Mrs. Grant. Come on up.
Hello. Is this close enough?
Yep, speak right up.
The poem I'm going to read is The Question Bag. It's from the Poetry Club. And we had these, Brooke brought in these bags with things in them, and we had to feel in them and feel what they were. So this is what it felt like to me. The question bag. It feels like dried soap, like dry soap after it's been used. Like an angel's wing, broken, turned to stone. It feels like ancient petrified wood, all worn smooth. It feels white or light pink. It felt like bone, stone cold. It was actually an otter's tooth, I think, or something like that.
That was beautiful. It's been a long time since I've seen a poet curtsy. Tom Bacon, after his retirement, decided on a second career as a poet in training. The pay isn't good, but the hours are flexible, and the work he sometimes is something he enjoys. Tom Bacon.
I'll start with a short poem that I just completed just because it's spring. Melodies. Coltrane's haunting saxophone. Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, Lennon's Imagine, Wind Tones and the Surge of Tides. I no longer know my beginning melody, nor know my last, but between I see a rainbow rhythm frozen in a lace of morning frost, and I hear the sunrise sonnet of an early robin's welcome song. And for my final poem is East of the Rockies. Along the North Platte, a petulant crowd of crows mobs the measured fields, a harsh tempo of hunger and hunger's need, drawn to the order of hay, corn, and wheat, in a frenzy unafraid to peck the dry pretense of the solitary straw man. his brittle weave worn too long under the burning sun. Inexplicably, the flock gathers the wind lonely, more lonely than just one. But I digress. Already afternoon, the rhythmic drum of bees and summer heat intensifies. At Independence Rock, old wagon ruts remain deep and burdened where ancestors circled around their dusky fires and rested beyond the prairie endlessness. Their journey only halfway, the slow pace of their plodding oxen still erodes my time's certainty. Then and now, the Red Canyon walls hold echoes of thunder. The black rain and sudden gusts swooping near, slow shadows pulling the night. Destiny's chance, the weathered trail markers. I travel west. Thank you.
It was beautiful. Melissa Marconi-Wenzel has worn many hats in Sitka over the last 15 years, the Raptor Center, Raven Radio, women's self-defense instructor, various nonprofits. Currently, she wears the hat of a full-time mom, which means she's tired all the time and frequently disheveled. Now, I haven't noticed that. She's always beautiful. Aww. Now she's going to cry.
Yeah. Okay. I woke up this morning hating everything I've ever written. Everything. So I was relieved to realize I've been writing some poetry on Facebook lately, so I resurrected a couple of those. My mother's hands. Over coffee and typing yesterday, I looked down and saw my mother's hands. An unsettling but not uncommon experience for women my age. My hands are transforming, disguising themselves as my mother's hands, as they looked when I, just a girl, became aware of my mother as a person distinct from myself, a person with age, an age, 42. I feel vaguely betrayed by my hands, not my mother, or perhaps, yes, my mother too. I thought I had control, but quite obviously, I do not. Because my mother in her early 40s is me in my early 40s. I may eat better, I think, exercise more, practice yoga, and think of myself as ageless with plenty of time for everything. But now I am becoming aware of myself as a person with age, an age, where my hands are becoming more veined and translucent and weary. And I fear that is all that I have, my mother's hands. But I hope that I also have my mother's grace in the face of the relentlessness of time and her endless expanses of love in the face of all our indifference. Turning the compost. After dinner, the lingering light of evening slants over the channel, and the seagulls return in great flocks to their roosts. Time hangs suspended in the western sky, and I have nothing but peace and the satisfaction of food returning to the earth, of cycles completed and anticipated again and again. To honor the nourished soil is enough for now. Thank you.
Blossom Twitchell, true loves in life are words, beautiful words, and coffee. She also is known to love a good musical, but she doesn't want anyone to know that. Blossom. Blossom also has a beautiful first name, I stole her first name to name Cecil Younger's child in my novels.
Thank you for coming out tonight. I want to thank Brooke for asking me to read. And John Straley, when I was over at Mount Edgecombe, that's how I got into writing. I was trying to escape my detail. And he said, come and write poetry. So I did. The first one is short, and it's called For My Mother. I am deeper than my skin, and yet I fade. The sun has kissed my cheeks and set the wrinkles in my soul, but each passing day I realize I'm more brilliant than the day I was born. second one is in three parts, and it's called, titled, My Childhood. I remember telling my mother that all we needed was a carrot and an onion, and if she cut those up, I'd run out and look for a rock. It would have to be a good-sized rock, smooth. I hadn't ever eaten stone soup, but if I did, my mother wouldn't have to worry. As long as it wasn't spinach, I'd be fine. But my mother said it wasn't that easy. I told her it would be fine. All we needed was a carrot and an onion. At the bus stop, I looked for a twinkle light. I kicked my feet as my small legs hung from the bus stop bench. It was cold in Fairbanks. I could see my breath. I saw my mother's tears freeze, but I didn't say anything. All I did was stretch out my neck to look for a twinkle light. That was our bus. That would bring us home. It wasn't until years later that my sister told me all buses were the same. They all had a twinkling light. But she didn't understand that twinkle light had a blue chair where I sat, and it was always empty waiting for me, and it always brought me home, wherever that was. Santa Claus could be a good father. He'd always be merry, cheerful, and bright. He would have elves that could help me with my homework, and science fairs would be a breeze. We could calculate gift deliveries through time zones. Mountains of blue ribbons would be ours. Yes, I remember when I wanted Santa Claus for a father. Alistair Cook was also on my list. I often wanted to climb up on his lap and have him read me story after story. We would sit in his noble chair and enjoy the fire. I looked at old Tom as a father. We always found him at Foodland. I remember the smell of oil on the wool of his blue work shirts. I remember the pens that lined his breast pocket. He never looked like Santa, but he would always buy me fries. He never had a noble chair, but my childhood was filled with memories of running up to kiss his cheek and sitting on his lap as he told me how to make a compass out of a styrofoam cup and a needle. He never understood science fairs, but he did understand life. Thank you.
Christina Cranston lives, works, and writes from Sitka, Alaska, and she writes to balance out the truth and lies that have been told to her and the truth and lies she has told. Christina. Also a marvelous artist.
So I love the name Blossom, and I love Cecil Younger. Oh. And I'm glad he had a baby named Blossom. Cecil got me through a really lonely marriage. I have a short piece, a tribute to Maya. Maya Angelou, American poet, activist, and mentor to so many, thinks and feels in flavors of syrup. Rich amber syrups, bitter black syrups, sweet honey syrups, tart red syrups, and tangy golden syrups are her viscous foundation. Her words, her children, her life, all bathed in luscious, smooth liquid, coating their skins and lining their souls, warm secretions bearing fruit. Maya's gift is to tap into the sweet milk of palms, spicy birch nectar, and the buttery liquid gold from maple trees, extracting the sap from the earth, only to share with us in ways we can understand, in words we can taste. Distilled sauces we read in her stories, slow-moving molasses we hear in her poems, and soothing, creamy antidotes we feel when she smiles. Maya Angelou thinks and feels in flavors of syrups that stretch and seep into our hearts and minds, purifying us with gummy persuasion and sticky impressions.
Thank you so much. Tina Johnson's poetry is a value for Tina. Her work has been influenced by reading Mary Oliver, Mark Doty, Lee Young Lee, Matthew Dickman, and Michael Dickman.
Every November, my father visited me. In the afternoon, we would drive out to Stargaven to see the swans tacked against a bolt of sky as if winter's gray needle held them there. Strings of darkness gathered, swans our last light. At home, there was cooking to do, but here, only my father and me, our lives trailing out like rope behind a skiff. And if we dreamed of flight as evening fluttered down, of fields and rivers that turned below like plates passed around a table, we knew our unwinged arms would never skim the clouds. Our hands, as if to prove, lay silent on the seat between us. Vespers. November evening, and trumpeter swans pass high above the harbor, flowing as if current-filled across a sky slowly numbing to black. Their necks are stretched like white cord, their feet tucked tight beneath wings that open and close like a pulse. The harbor must appear as flickers to them, sparks beset by yawning spans of darkness, with myself below, aimless and cold, invisible, whispering a prayer for swans and rusty blackbirds, for winter wrens and pipits, who leave the dismantled nest of summer to chalk a line across the rising slate of winter. Their only map, a particular vista that tings the lightness in their bones. Let mercy fall on those who trust in destinations, for Earth's arc is parceled into endless miles, so many of them traveled in the dark.
Brooke Schaefer is going to read, and then I'd like to read you two poems. And Brooke writes poetry as a form of exploration.
Laying down a skate. Today I wonder about migrating halibut, flying the mid-depths like thick, fucus-colored angels with fangs. All undulation and flutter and flatness and girth. And I think about plucking them from their flight, like picking off swans from the sky. Except the thrust is upwards, the splash is outwards, the salt slides down and off, the air is warm, and there's so much brightness and exactness to the world around them suddenly, no amniotic like fluid, no muffled softness. And I think of marriage, and how since marrying you, I have become intimate with absence, EPIRBs and trackers and satellite phones. I feel like a halibut out of water in this thing, this marriage with you, except I'm my own hook, and I've willingly hooked myself, and here I am flailing about in the air. If for a moment I could be clear, here's what I would tell you. I'll do no more killing, and you will love me as much as I love you. And our marriage will be like a migration through mid-depth waters, the world a miraculous expanse to wave through, we two curious-looking angels wing to wing in the wild ocean. Thanks.
Well, we're coming to the end of the evening, and so we've had just a generous dose of beautiful poetry tonight. And I just wanted, this is a poem I wrote this week. This is called Summer 1963. My father pulled his car to the side of the road 20 miles from Ten Sleep, Wyoming, and we ate our bologna sandwiches on the ground. Two men rode out of the distance on thin paint horses with loose bits in their mouths and short reins. Father and son, it appeared, Lakota perhaps, walnut-skinned, yellow bandanas. The boy carried a quirt while riding a colt, which spooked at us sitting there. But he did not say a word to us or his young horse, just snapped his leather whip one time. My dad drank his last beer through his can right there on the road, and we left. I finished my warm soda in the car, craning around backwards to see where they went. Too many times I have thought of that sense. Too many times I followed them and retraced their steps back down the canyon where they came. My father died in 1999 in a soft Seattle bed. But I stayed too long on that roadside outside Ten Sleep, Wyoming. And that was my mistake, for not picking up the can, for not paying attention to what was really going on in all the long years since then. And one thing, if you write poems for people, they'll ask you to write poems for their weddings. And I wrote this for Lisa and Davy's wedding. This is called Accidental Blessings. And it has a reference, it has an epigraph for you young ones. An epigraph is where you steal a piece of poetry and you put it at the beginning of your poem to sort of class it up a little bit. And this has an epigraph from William Stafford, who is a wonderful poem, and I met him right here in this building years and years ago. And it's the epigraph comes from his poem called Ask Me. Others have come in their slow way into my thought, and some have tried to help or hurt. Ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made. What the river says, that is what I say. On the afternoon he died, Bill Stafford wrote a note to his wife on the back of a photograph. He was at his desk, feeling fine, his friends later said. I have always loved you, he wrote on the picture of her taken some 40 years before, and then he laid down. Dorothy poked into the berries, and the blades of the blender bit the spoon, spattering red pulp around the room. Bill, she said, can you come help me? But of course, he couldn't. That this life is a collision of accidental blessings makes it no less precious or determined. We know the water rises from the oceans, is blown against the mountains, then drops down into the streams. But remember, there is no sense in this, and none of the rules that come after matter to those frantic falling waters. This is anarchy, this blessing of rain. This is what your love is and what we are here to celebrate, the lucky, unexpected meeting that somehow comes to ground. So this is what the river says. Rain and rock are souls, the voice of the grasses on the bank, dipper and junco, each moment filling the cup of right now. Each kiss a small sip, mud and dying fish, bears and smolt, trout and bushes, salmonberry, blueberry, huckleberry, nagoonberry, thimbleberry, cloudberry, enough pure sweetness in this life to compensate for anything, anything, including death. And this, my dear friends, is what I say. In this wet country, love may not always be enough. But eventually, it will fill everything, everything left open. Thank you. And good night.
You've been listening to a recording of the Kettleson Memorial Library's Live Poetry Cafe event that was held on April 26th, 2015.